If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
What's up, gamers? You are watching Kinda Funny Games Daily for the 30th of November, 2021. I am your host, Tamor Hussein, and joining me once again is Gary Witter. How are you doing, Gary?
Good. Third time hosting third together. Time. I've enjoyed the first two.
Let's see how the third one goes.
We've been a good combo so far, I think.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's good to have a like-minded, like-voiced person to talk to every now and then.
The question is, are we going to waste another, as we've done both shows so far together, waste another 30 minutes just talking about a bunch of British bullshit that 90% of our audience won't understand?
I mean, people, based on what I've seen, people are like, I don't understand any of it, but it sounds cool and I'm enjoying it. But I think we've like rapidly run out of most British things. Like earlier today, I was looking at a news story about Crazy Frog, and I was like, is that a British thing?
Yeah, Crazy Frog is coming back. Can you believe
he's
that?
Coming he's back. And it, like, it's such a... Which is weird because canonically, they killed him off. Like, he's dead. Crazy Frog should be dead.
Listen, so no one's ever dead when there's still money to be made. They'll always find a way to bring those characters back.
What are you guys talking about?
I guess Crazy Frog wasn't a thing here. It was huge, though. Not just in the UK, but in Europe, and I think around the world, but maybe it missed America somehow.
Yeah, I mean, like, if Jesus can come back for Christmas, Crazy Frog can come back for Christmas, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, ding, ding, Crazy Frog
Jesus
to make a comeback.
Jesus doesn't come back at Christmas, he comes
I know, but I needed to make it work for
that. He's born at Christmas. That's the limit of my Christian knowledge, though.
So he's making a comeback in December, and literally the explanation on the BBC have done a long article on it, and it was like, how was Crazy Frog born? And literally the article boils down to this lad wanted some money, so they brought it back. And I was like, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I was reading the article, and I remember, so Crazy Frog was at one point the number one selling of all time ringtone. Mm-hmm. Back, remember when ringtones were a thing? You would buy a ringtone?
Yeah, there were adverts for ringtones on the TV. People who don't know what Crazy Frog is, for context, it was this really annoying frog that did a song called Axel F, which is the Beverly Hills Cop theme. Mm-hmm. And would just replace all the sounds with a ding, 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 ding. And it was just
really annoying, like kind of
infuriating,
like hyper high pitched vocalizations. Yes. It's hard to explain it if you like, but that just don't. But if you wanted to, you can go to YouTube and see it for yourself. But he's coming back, apparently.
He's coming back, and Lord knows what he's... I'd love it if they did... What movie theme would you want him... I would love to see him do, like, Ding Ding on the Avengers theme, which is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a way to sell it. but I want to kick off by giving you something I know you love. Because, one, it lets us talk about your Christmas jumper. But, two, because I know you love Fall Guys. Update for Fall Guys. New season's kicking off.
Yeah, today.
Yep, and the big update for me is Jin Sakai from Ghost of Tsushima is now available in the game. There's a samurai outfit and a ghost outfit, which is amazing. How are you feeling about Fall Guys now that the new season has started? And tell us also about your Christmas jumper.
This actually was sent to me by the good people at Mediatonic. This is the official Fall Guys Christmas jumper. And it felt appropriate. I saw you on Twitter earlier today talking about maybe wearing a Christmas sweater for the show. I feel like, you know, once we get past Thanksgiving, we can, you know, we can turn on the Mariah Carey. We can fully get into it, put your tree up, get the Christmas jumpers on, start drinking the, you know, all the peppermint drinks and what have you. We're actually going to go out and get our tree later today.
Nice.
And so I was going through my Christmas jumpers early today. I've got a bunch of nerdy ones. I've got like a Mario one and a Star Wars one and various other things. But this one, first of all, fits me the best because it's very baggy. But also Fall Guys Season 6 out today. I'm going to be playing that later today, so felt like a double celebration. Yeah. I've always loved Fall Guys, but in the the last couple of updates, I kind of fell off it a little bit. But when a new update comes out and there's new rounds, you always want to go back and see what's new. So my daughter's very excited about it as well. She's a big Fall Guys player. We're going to check it out later today,
so
Season 6.
So, like... That is brilliant. Also, I'm going to do an explainer of my Christmas jumper.
What is that? Satanic? What is that?
Kind of. So, like, as people who don't know, I am a Muslim. traditionally we don't celebrate Christmas. However, I'm also, you know, a child of the Western world, and I have got no beef with Christmas. You know what I'm saying? I'm progressive when it comes like that. So very much I am I'm a product of, you know, South Asian meets Western kind of like traditions. And I thought, what better way to kind of highlight that than pick a jumper that represents the melding of two unexpected different sources of background and history. So I wore this special jumper that I'm sure anime fans will recognize.
Go on then.
It's a...
Oh no.
What is that?
That's a chimera that was created. Oh no, it's very sad.
What anime is that from?
Brotherhood.
Full Metal Alchemist?
It's a character called
The thing where they go to that place and he made that horrible thing?
Yes. Anyway, yes, let's just move on from that.
I remember watching that episode and I had to block it out of my mind because it was so awful. Didn't they end up killing that guy? They had to kill him, right? Because he was
It was a girl mixed with their dog. It's very sad.
No, but it was like the dad, like the scientist or whatever.
Sure, Tucker, life alchemist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Anyways, today's stories include the GTA trilogy patch, Starfield teasers, Nintendo making some changes to improve diversity, and more, because this is kind of funny, Games Daily, where each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know to... you know, justify your intense love of video games. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong, which never happens, by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use the Epic Creator Code on games like Fortnite and Rocket League by typing in Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases, and you support the channel by doing that. Very easy. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free along with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, I mean, goddamn, one time let it be a bad game of sweeping. The Hawkeye episode 1 and 2 review is up now on YouTube, and it features Tim, Nick, and Kevin breaking down all their thoughts and feelings on the new Marvel show that is on youtube.com/kindoffunny. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's amazing, the show and the breakdown. So make sure you check it out. Today is Giving Tuesday, and we're raising money for Project Hope, and we are streaming Avengers, Marvel's Avengers, yes, and we can't stream Marvel's Avengers without having one Greg Miller returning, along with Snowbike Mike, and they're going to check out Spider-Man on the opening day, which is today.
Spider-Man comes out today
that
as well.
That is, of course, going to be on kindoffunny.com, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Pranksy and Blackjack, and today we're brought to you by Purple Mattress, DraftKings, and Liquid IV, but we'll tell you more about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and will forever be the Roper Report. It's time for some MFing news. We have six stories today.
A baker's dozen!
That might actually be five. I think I made a last minute edit. We'll see how that goes. Number one story is GTA trilogy patch fixes more than 100 bugs. This, of course, coming from the number one video game website on the internet. It is GameSpot.com, written by Eddie McCoot. A new update for GTA trilogy, the definitive edition, is out now, and it includes more than 100 fixes for the game's various issues that have soured the experience for some. This update arrives not long after Rockstar apologized for the issues with GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas, acknowledging that the game did not release in a state that lived up to developers' own expectations and what fans wanted to see. The November 30th patch includes general stability improvements across all three games and fixes a long list of bugs. In particular, the update improves how rain looks so it's not totally overwhelming in GTA 3. It's wild. The update fixes a number of spelling errors too, while it also addresses how CJ's body looks. The patch also adds a new feature in the form of a cinematic camera, which can be toggled on and off. Overall, Rockstar said it is hopeful that all three games will eventually reach the level of quality that they deserve to be, with new updates that improve the experience. We gave it a 4 out of 10 and said it had a hell of a lot of issues. And according to a report, if GTA re-releases perform well, Rockstar might remaster Red Dead Redemption next, and Take-Two's Karl Sackhoff recently outlined Take-Two's position on the remaster, saying it's all about money, which is an interesting place to be. So, Gary, what I wanted to ask you was the statement, not statement, the fact that they said we're hoping to eventually get it to a good place is absolutely wild to me. For Grand Theft Auto, three of the most beloved games of all time, genre-defining, medium-defining games, set the stage and set the formula template for modern open world games, and they're like, we'll get it to a place where it's acceptable at some point. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is a story that has been very relevant to my interest because I've been playing the games. I got the trilogy. I was very interested to revisit them, and I assumed like a fool that Rockstar would do a good job with them because these are the crown jewels, right? These are the three games that kind of made them who they are today, right? GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas. Those three games, you know, occupy a very significant place in the pantheon of the development of video games just overall, right? You know, there's a lot's been said, and rightly so, about just how historically significant GTA 3 is in kind of opening up the whole open world genre and taking games in that direction. But certainly in the history of Rockstar, those games are incredibly significant. And so I assumed that Rockstar would acknowledge that they have kind of a duty of care towards these games, these crown jewels in their library, and would do right by them when they shipped them. And they didn't, right? They were a fucking mess. I was playing Vice City, and I personally didn't encounter anything too bad. Like, it's like there was some weirdness here and there, but I thought it was basically okay. But then I started watching some of the YouTube videos and seeing some of the experiences that other people were having, and it was clear that these games shipped in an absolute unacceptable state. And I find it shocking. Jeff Gerstmann tweeted something about this to the effect the other day, in a more general sense. I think he was referring to Battlefield 2042 when he said, do you remember the old days when a developer would lay out its roadmap post-release, and it would be like for a bunch of, you know, new content and DLC and, you know, the positive places the game would go, as opposed to what the roadmap is now post-release, which is basically, oh my God, we're so sorry, here are all the patches that are going to fix the broken game that we shipped. And, you know, we're hearing this way too often these days. We're seeing it right now with Battlefield. We're seeing it right now with GTA. And it's shocking. And I think it's particularly shocking in the case of Rockstar with these crown jewel titles that they had. I honestly don't understand how they could have been either so negligent or so apathetic to the state of the games that they allowed them to go out. Like, was there no one at Rockstar or in the Take-Two hierarchy anywhere that looked at these games before release and said, okay, these can't go out. But, like, I don't care what it cost. Like, these cannot go out. These are not ready.
But Gary, like, isn't it true that Grand Theft Auto Online is still broken as fuck? Like,
when you're
like, all right, I want to go play with my friends, and you're new to it, it is an absolute disaster. And I say this because now multiple times me and Greg have been like, let's go play this game, and it's just like we get so fed up with the bullshit that like when you're like, oh, let me start a race with my four friends that I'm with, it like breaks you up and you're not in the team, and it's like, why is this broken? Like, why?
I had some of the worst experiences I've ever had in my life and have been with GTA Online. And it's weird. So Rockstar's got this weird reputation now, this kind of mixed reputation where, you know, look at GTA 5, look at Red Dead Redemption 2. Those single player experiences are fantastic, right? But then GTA Online's a mess. These remasters are a mess. I now am a lot less optimistic about this GTA 5 remaster that I've been waiting for because they messed these ones up. So, but again, I come back to this. Did seriously nobody look at those games and say, if we ship these, we are going to suffer for it? Like, no one's going to accept the games in this state.
I'm sure that they were like, you know what? It's going to make more sense to release this quarter instead of next quarter. For like, you know, annual reports or whatever.
I just don't understand that kind of thinking.
It won't
matter. Maybe that makes your quarterly numbers look better in the short term. But in the long term, you have done serious long term damage to your reputation.
Yeah, it is.
Does nobody consider that?
It is ridiculous, but like firstly, to kind of address what Kevin said, like Kevin's 100% right on GTA Online, but I don't know, I kind of give that a little more of a pass because it is ridiculous the things that that game is doing. They're like jerry-rigging insane shit to that game constantly. So I think to a degree, they just accept that every time they make a change, the kind of the house of cards kind of situation happens where it's going to knock into 8 different things that they just aren't aware of, and it's going to break in so many different ways. That is not an excuse for the end consumer, any player who has a bad time, but I forgive it to a degree. But Gary's 100% right. Like, how did no one look at this and be like, this is a contained experience that people have an expectation of, and they also have almost like a time capsule in their brain.
Yeah,
of
and
how
very,
this is going
very
to
these,
play.
These games are very special to a lot of people. Yeah, we all have fond memories of these games.
Yeah, the general line should be, if this experience degrades their rose-tinted glasses memory of GTA in any way, it should not be allowed out of the gate. Like, the fact that it was allowed out of the gate
is obviously not a Rockstar problem. Again, we're seeing it right now with Battlefield. We saw it with Cyberpunk 2077. We've seen this short-term thinking, oh, the quarterly reports are more important than the long-term damage.
Yes.
To our reputation. I don't understand it at all.
But, like,
I think it's very blinkered thinking.
There's no way that this got through QA without multiple people in that pipeline going, this is messed up.
And that's what I think was interesting about the apology. First of all, I appreciated and thought it was appropriate.
It's bullshit.
That
no,
they
but
did.
It's
well, hold on, Kevin. I thought it was appropriate that they straight up apologized because an apology was absolutely warranted. It's not just good enough to say,
especially from
we're going to fix this. You have to apologize for what you did because you really, really fucked this up. And again, these aren't just any games. These are games that are very, very special to, you know, an entire generation, multiple generations of gamers that grew up with these games and love them. That's the whole reason behind the appeal of these games is, to some extent, people get to play them for the first time because maybe, you know, they weren't old enough when they first came out. But for many of us, want to go back and revisit these games that we have such, you know, affection for, and it's kind of ruined it for us, right? They're nowhere near as good as the originals. They took briefly, at least for a time, the originals down, so it was the only way you could play these games. They make these in many ways, these so-called definitive editions are demonstrably worse than the originals. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how they got to that. So the point I wanted to make was, while I appreciated the fact that they did actually apologize, which is very rare in this business, there was some really strange wording in that apology when they said, we apologize that this game ships with all these unexpected technical issues. Mm-hmm. How the fuck was any of this unexpected?
Did anyone
play these games before they went out?
It's a bullshit apology. It's a bullshit apology. Yeah. They don't care. The fact is, when NPD comes out, this trilogy is going to be ranked up there real high, and that's why
They could have had those NPD numbers 2 or 3 quarters from now without the reputational hit that they take.
I don't know. I don't know
early.
Where their annual year like starts
take
or any
two,
of that.
Take, it's not like
but
Take Two's going out of business if they don't ship this game.
It doesn't matter, but it's
going to
look a lot better.
Rockstar's going out of business. These companies are swimming in money. How fucking greedy are they?
That's what companies are, though. Yeah, I think the interesting thing here is both Kevin and Gary, you're on the same side, and you're both baffled at how this went so
Kevin
wrong.
And I are furiously agreeing with each other, right?
Yeah, that's what's happening here. And like, the thing that we're disagreeing on is how could this happen and they allow this to happen? And the fact
we're
of the
all
matter
equally
is,
baffled as to how a company a this of, big with this much money, with these resources, I presume that people at Rockstar care about their reputation.
Yeah, Rockstar,
and
if anyone,
and they really,
based on my
really damaged it with this. Not now, but people are going to remember this for a long fucking time.
The next time when they announce, if they do a Red Dead Redemption remaster, people are going to be like,
maybe I'll wait and see, because you remember what happened with the definitive trilogy.
Like, people are going to definitely say that, but guess what? It's still going to sell tremendously well. And they're going to recover from this totally. And when they announce the next GTA, we're all going to be like, oh, here's our money.
To me, the only solution then, and it's a really depressing conclusion to arrive at, the only explanation is why they let this happen is because they just don't care, and it's contempt. They just don't care what you think.
I don't think
as long
it's
as
that.
They get their money, yeah, they don't care what you think.
I think it's an element. I think from the business side, it is definitely that people want to make certain amounts of money. They need to hit certain metrics and KPIs within certain time frames. That's how business works, especially in games. And now with, you know, the stakes are so high with these multi-billion-dollar franchises and publishers and developers, and the need to make money now versus to delay that gratification is so intense. I think the thing for me that really sticks out is, do you remember when the advent of the internet being introduced to games was happening, and there was a lot of like consternation and a lot of nervousness around it? And for sure, the internet making its way into our everyday gaming experience has been incredible, life-changing stuff. But this is a symptom of one of the worst things of having internet-enabled development, delivery, and propagation of games, where developers, less so developers, because I feel like generally developers understand the issues that they face and are pushed to do this, but publishers now have a way of pushing out unfinished experiences with the "we'll fix this later" mentality. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been one of the worst things to happen to video games in such a long time. It's been kind of elevated and normalized by early access, which I think early access is awful. I hate it. And I respect that people use it for really interesting things, and I love that. But early access has basically normalized or made it okay for people with the idea of releasing something that is not done. And originally there was a small subsection of games that was okay for. Steam games on PC, where there were online connectivity was a big deal, or multiplayer was a big deal, and you could get away with saying, hey, we're working on this, we're going to work on this together, and we'll be okay. You're going to pay a smaller amount of money to jump in, or you're going to pay nothing, and we'll figure this out, and then we're going to charge for it. But now that kind of mentality and the goodwill, or the kind of understanding that the contract between people who were okay with that and were doing that on PC has been leveraged and taken advantage of by major publishers as a way to shovel out
I don't have as much of a problem with early access as you do, as long as it's clearly labeled as such. People know what they're getting themselves into.
But yeah, it's when they charge full price.
None of the issues that we're talking about right now, like Cyberpunk 2077, that wasn't early access. That was a 1.0 release that you were asked $60 for. Mm-hmm. 2042, that wasn't early access. There was the week you got it a week early if you paid for the Super Duper Edition or whatever. And the same with GTA Definitive Edition. None of these were early access. These were full price games that were shipped in boxes that you were expected to pay full price for, and you have a reasonable expectation that if you pay full price, you're getting a finished game. I don't get to say to EA or Rockstar or Activision or anyone else or CD Projekt, hey, here's my roadmap for how I'm going to pay you for this fucking game over the next 6 months. I'm working on getting to the first 20. In Q1, I'm going to ship you $20. I have to pay you up. I have to pay you up front everything right away. So why don't I get the whole game right away? Wait until the game is fucking finished. This isn't rocket science.
Yeah, exactly. And like the difficult thing is, there's not really any way. Well, there is a way, but like my recommendation is for people, stop pre-ordering so crazy amounts. Like pre-order things are a dangerous game for me. I do not pre-order games at all because I just do not trust it these days. And also take advantage of that refund policy that a lot of these platforms have and start giving games back. Like start getting your money back for games, because once that starts happening, and it really, like we said last time we did this show, Gary and I, like once you start impacting pocketbooks and bank accounts and financials, that's when people start paying attention. So that's the small amount of protest that we can do. Like
For the most part, I've just stopped playing games. I'm happy to, you know, I've got such a big backlog of games. I'm happy to, I'll get around to a game 6 months from now. And you know what? I'll have a better experience playing the game for the first time than you did. You had it at launch, because maybe 6 months from now, they've actually fixed a bunch of the problems. I want my first experience with a game that I've been anticipating to be a good one. And the chance when the time when that's least likely to happen is at launch. And I've had this rule for a while, and I broke it a couple of times recently because I was really keen to try out Battlefield 2042. I didn't have a good time with it. Maybe I'll reinstall it after they fixed some of the issues. I jumped into Halo early. I've actually had a good, they actually got that pretty much right. We'll talk about the battle pass later, but the actual game works. I was talking to someone about this the other day. I think it was someone on last week's. Oh no, it was on XCast. I was talking about, oh my god, our standards are so low that we're now like giving Microsoft and 343 all these plaudits for just shipping a game that worked on day one. Yeah, like that's on day a special one, yeah. thing. That should be that. That should still be the expectation. But no, that's like a special award for a game that works on day one now.
Well,
yeah, and the other thing to say is like this isn't the case for all games. There's a lot of games that come out and they're perfectly fine and great, like, or they have small issues that are very quickly, you know, tweaked and fixed. Like Guardians of the Galaxy came out and I had little to no issues with that. There was maybe one visual thing that happened right at the start of the game that they patched out very quickly. And like you said, Halo was fine. I mean, I've been playing like a lot of JRPGs, Tales of Arise, for example, perfectly fine. A lot of games are absolutely fine, but there are a few too many for my like. It shouldn't be happening with Grand Theft Auto. It should not be happening with Battlefield.
And Grand Theft Auto aside, where we've seen what a mess that is, single player games, I think for the most part, you're more likely to have a decent experience on day one. It's not always perfect, but more likely. Anytime you get into the online realm, that's when you're going to, there's obviously the whole other burden of server issues and player balancing and stuff like that, and it becomes much more messy. That's why Battlefield's in such a mess right now. That's why we've seen so many of these problems where, you know, games just don't work on day one if they have like a big online component. So for me, my solution now is just to wait. Like basically live 6 months behind everyone else. If the game's popular and it worked out and it's a hit, there'll still be people playing it from 6 months from now. I'll jump in after it's been properly patched. And now I'm playing the game that should have shipped on day one. Mm. Instead of having all the frustration. The problem is we as gamers don't learn our lesson. We'll come on here and go, oh, enough is enough. But then we en masse will still go out and buy the next broken release from EA or Activision or Rockstar or whoever.
Not me, baby. Never. That was a long time on one story, so we're going to blitz through the next couple. Speaking of good fun games, Halo Infinite has been given an update, which is music to our ears. This story comes from the second best video game website on the internet. That is, of course, GameSpot.com. Once again, Eddie McCooch writes, the Halo Infinite XP changes have been announced and they are going to affect soon. In response to negative feedback, 343 Industries has announced further steps to help improve the XP and progression systems in Halo Infinite's multiplayer beta. Community manager Joss Junicek, I think that's right. John. Apologies for butchering your name, ran through the changes on Twitter saying players can expect increased XP payouts for the first 6 matches each day. Here is the rundown. So first game will be 300 experience points, second 200, third 200, fourth 100, fifth and sixth also 100, and then seventh plus 50. We believe this increase will help address the slower initial payouts while also benefiting those of you jumping in each and every day, John said. He went on to say that 343 understands that players want to see even more substantial changes to experience points, and the studio plans to deliver such changes, but it might not happen soon. We know many of you want even larger changes, and we're committed to doing so, but those will take time. We made this update based on data and player feedback, and we'll monitor its impact after we push it live tomorrow morning. As always, keep sharing your feedback. This is the second update to Halo Infinite's XP system since the multiplayer launch on November 15th. The first added daily Play 1 game challenges, updated existing weekly challenges, and doubled the duration of double XP boosts. These changes represent just a start, so you can expect more in the future. So that's basically they've made the Battle Pass a little easier to get along, which is music to my ears. I don't know how you feel about it, Gary. I'm sure you're excited about it too.
This is another one that I've been following because, as you know, I've been playing a lot of Halo. Mm-hmm. This is only really my second real experience with a game that has like a Battle Pass type component, because I don't typically play a lot of these kind of games. And the other one is Fall Guys, because that has what they call it the Fame Path, but it's their it's their Battle Pass basically. As you go up through the levels, you earn cosmetics and kudos and cute little bean costumes and stuff. And it's, you know, it's fun to see your level go. You know, we like seeing the numbers go up in video games, right? We'll always be addicted to dinging and going up. It's not the reason why I play the game, though. I enjoy playing Halo. And I think I'm just speaking for myself. I don't care as much about the issues with the Battle Pass as a lot of people who seem to be really focused on progression and rewards are. It's all just cosmetic stuff, right? Your level number doesn't really mean anything. Players don't see it when you go into a game. So it's not like you get to wear it on your sleeve and brag about it. They can kind of tell based on like the cosmetics you might be wearing, oh, this guy must have played a lot because he has a lot of high level armor or whatever. But for the most part, it doesn't mean anything. They're all cosmetics. It's not like I'm going to get better weapons or things that are going to actually help me play the game. It's just all cosmetics. And the thing is, the cosmetics, I mean, maybe if there's a criticism on my end, this is the cosmetics are kind of lame. like here's a shoulder piece or whatever. None of it's really that exciting. Or here's a challenge swap. Like that, I don't really care. I think maybe it's just that people aren't seeing the numbers go up quickly enough. Like right, they've introduced this new system, but before today, you basically, if all you got was the 50 XP for playing a game, it would take you 20 matches to go up one level, and that's a lot, right? So people are just feeling like it's taking too long to see the numbers go up. But that's all it is. It's nothing tangible. It's nothing real. It's just watching the numbers go up. And my other question about it is, I feel like this is an interesting balancing issue for any company that deploys a game that has a battle pass, is how do you find that? Because obviously there's all kinds of players that play at different levels. There's people like me that play, you know, maybe every day or maybe a couple of times a week, but then there's people that are grinding 24/7. So there's people progressing through the battle pass at all kinds of different speeds. How do you find that balance that is satisfying for everybody? Because now that they're adding to the XP gains and making it easier to progress through the battle pass, this season is supposed to last several months, right? What do you then do with the players that burn through all the content, hit level whatever it is 100, and now you've got another complaint, which is, well, I've burned through it too quickly, now there's nothing for me to earn. So it's like you've got to I kind of feel like there's almost kind of a no-win scenario with these battle passes, trying to find a progression that suits everybody. Someone's always going to complain.
Yeah, I think that's the tricky part of it, because, I mean, like, it's really interesting, the battle pass thing. I don't care about it, but I sometimes find myself looking at the battle pass and being frustrated by it, even though, and then I have to remind myself, wait, you don't actually care about this, which says a lot about the psychology of how games are designed to almost suggest the fact that you should care about this subconsciously. And it's the idea of, you might be playing a game multiplayer, but you still to a degree want some sort of indicator of your time invested and progress. I remember back in the day when we played multiplayer games and we just played them and that was it. There was no like, you know, you've made it this far in a battle pass, you've unlocked this and this. We played, let's take it pretty far back, I don't know, Quake or GoldenEye or whatever, Counter-Strike, what it may be. You played 3 hours of Counter-Strike and then you turned it off and that was it. These days, however, people want it to be like, I played 3 hours of Counter-Strike and it was fun, but what do I have to show for it? And that's kind of like where battle passes come into a degree, but also like keeping people hooked on the cosmetic side of it. I do have that moment where I'm like, okay, I'm tired of looking at my standard issue Spartan, and it would be good to see, you know, some mix up the cosmetics here and there, especially as someone who like back in the day had like the recon armor and the Hayabusa armor and all the flaming heads and all that nonsense. And I remember being like jazzed by that stuff. But these days it's like, I play it and I'm like, oh, I've got boring stuff.
It's different for everyone, but like the armor that I'm wearing, I earned like 5-10 levels ago. That's the armor that I like. And I've picked up a bunch of pieces since then that I just haven't used because I like the armor that I have. So I'm not too excited about the cosmetics. The biggest issue for me, and this is what I talked about earlier, is I just don't like how their challenge system works. Whether I win or lose, I get the same number of XP whether I win or lose in a game. I don't feel like I'm being rewarded for how well I'm playing. I wish some of the challenges were more generically tied to how well you play. Like if you have a positive KDA, here's an extra XP. If your team wins, have some extra XP. But right now, whether I play really, really well or really, really badly, I get the same number of points. And where I'm being rewarded is for very specific things that I don't want to do, like get 10 kills with this weapon that you hate using. Oh, fuck that. I'm gonna burn one of my challenge swaps. Okay, we swapped it out. Now get 10 kills with this other weapon that you hate using. Like, it's asking me to do a bunch of stuff that I don't want to do, whereas I'd rather be rewarded for just being good at the game in general.
Yeah, I agree. Kevin, you were going to say something there.
No, I was just going to say that we expect rewards, but a lot of times we're paying for stuff, you know, like for battle passes and whatnot.
That's true.
So I think that, like, that is directly connected with, like, well, I paid $10 for the next 3 months of getting these things that don't change the gameplay at all, are just like aesthetics swaps. So I do think like there's a little bit of validation there with that. So I don't think it's just us being like, gimme, gimme, gimme.
Yeah. We've got a few more stories, but we went quite long on these two. So we're going to kick it over to get a word from our sponsors. But before we do that, remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. If you did that, great. If not, you're about to get some ads in your face. Enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. Did you know that colder weather makes it easier to miss the classic signs of dehydration like overheating and perspiration? That's why, even though it's colder out, it's more important than ever to keep your body properly hydrated. Luckily, Liquid IV makes hydration easier than ever. I love Liquid IV. There's been a ton of mornings where I'm waking up not feeling that great. Then, boom, you pour some of this in the water. Next thing you know, you're hydrated. Liquid IV is not an actual IV drip, but it does hydrate you faster and more efficiently than plain old water. But that's because Liquid IV uses cellular transport technology, which is a very fancy way of saying it contains the perfect balance of vitamins to help you hydrate quicker. Grab your favorite Liquid IV flavors nationwide at Walmart, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code KFGD at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you get better hydration today using promo code KFGD at liquidiv.com. Next up, shout out to Purple. There's no gift better than the gift of a great night's sleep. Give yourself the gift of the best, a Purple mattress. I have so many glowing things to say about Purple. You guys have heard it for years. The pillow changed my life because guess what? There is no hot side. You never need to flip it to the cold side because they're both cold sides. It's fantastic. Purple mattresses are the best because they're the only ones around with the gel flex grid. That's what makes all that flipping possible. It's a super stretchy, ultra squishy material that adapts and flexes around pressure points, supports and cushions you in all the right places, and doesn't retain heat. Oh, and I love that. Getting a great night's sleep starts with having a great mattress. Get a Purple mattress. Go to purple.com/games10 and use code games10. For a limited time, you can get 10% off any order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/games10, code games10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. purple.com/games10, promo code games10. Terms apply. And finally, shout out to DraftKings. NFL fans, the fantasy football season doesn't just start in September. Every week is a new shot to win big cash prizes at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. And this week, new customers can play free for millions with their first deposit. Don't sit on the sidelines. Get in the game. Playing daily fantasy football is simple. Just pick your lineup of NFL stars while staying under the salary cap and score enough points to bring home cash. And with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, you'll feel the NFL action like never before. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code KINDAFUNNY to play free for millions. That's right. Enter promo code KINDAFUNNY to get a free shot at millions in total prizes with your first deposit. Do not miss out. Download DraftKings and play with the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. There's a minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Next story comes from VGC's Tom Ivan, who's a top lad. I used to work with him, sat beside him for many years, put a stake in his drawer for months. Actually, Andy did it, but yeah, it
was weird. He never know.
I think it was raw. Andy did it. He just chucked it in there. It was like, let's see if he notices. He didn't notice for a while, so we had to take it out because it was getting weird. I think it started, that's when we took it out. Andy Robinson and me, Tom, we did some wild shit in that office, and it was a lovely time. And the story is CD Projekt says it's way too early for Cyberpunk 2077 to come to Xbox Game Pass. CD Projekt has said that it's way too soon for Cyberpunk 2077 to join any console subscription services. During an investor Q&A on Monday, the company was asked if it has considered bringing the game to subscription services like Game Pass. We always consider any business opportunity, but this kind of subscription model is good at a certain moment of the life cycle of the product. So not too early, President Adam Kaczynski responded. Witcher 3 was for some time in a subscription, Xbox Game Pass and PlayStation Now, but we have to weigh the benefit and cost each time. So we have to compare it to sales, so it's a decision based on data. It's way too early for Cyberpunk. Earlier this month, a CD Projekt Red spokesperson told VGC there are no Game Pass plans for Cyberpunk 2077 after footage of the title was included in a marketing video for the Xbox service. Cyberpunk 2077 was released in December 2020 and was available for as little as $9.99 over the Black Friday period. CD Projekt Red said on Monday that the new gen versions of Cyberpunk 2077 and The Witcher 3 are on track to meet their recently delayed launch windows. During an investor Q&A, Kaczynski also reiterated plans to gradually introduce multiplayer functionality for both the Cyberpunk and Witcher franchises. So this is an interesting one, mainly because Is it a case of it's too early because of the life cycle? Is it a case of because it's still got a lot of work to do before they can get it in there? I am like of the opinion that it's Game Pass is only a benefit to a lot of these projects, especially when it's like we need a win in this. We need a win in this, the story of this game. How do you feel about that, Gary?
First of all, I think it's funny that CD Projekt Red finally decide that now is the time to associate Cyberpunk 2077 with the concept of way too early. Like, where was that association when they decide to ship the fucking game? Now they decide things are way too early. It was way too early to ship the game. Look how broken it was. Let's go back to our earlier conversation. This is a perfect example of a game that I've been waiting on. I was really excited about Cyberpunk 2077. Exactly my kind of game. Love that kind of world. Love the GTA open world vibe. It was one of my most anticipated games. And then it shipped. And I was glad that I waited, and I'm still waiting. By all accounts, I've been following all the patches and updates. The PC version, I think, is actually in a fairly decent state. I think I'm probably just going to wait for the next gen console versions and get to a point where the consensus is, yes, this is the game that they should have shipped. Again, I want to have a good experience with the game that I have a lot of anticipation for the first time I play it. So I'm just going to wait. I've got other things to do. There's many other games out there to play. I will get to Cyberpunk 2077 when it's properly ready for me to play. In terms of the Game Pass of it all, I don't know, maybe Microsoft could have had a hand in this decision. They might not, if the game is still has got a lot of technical issues, especially on the current and last gen consoles. I don't know how the game's currently performing on Xbox One, but I imagine not that brilliantly. I know the PS4 version borderline unplayable. I don't know how well it works on the last gen Xbox consoles, but it may well be that Microsoft don't want it on Game Pass. They don't want to put a game that is not fit for purpose in front of their Game Pass audience. It's not a good look for them.
Yeah, I wonder if it also has something to do with the perception around the value and of Cyberpunk if they put it in right now, and also kind of the intention from CD Projekt Red. A game on that scale, like, when a game is announced as a Game Pass exclusive from the outset, there's a different perception of the value of it and the quality of it compared to when a game comes out, has a rocky, really, really rocky release and kind of like a big fall off in interest, and then they put it on. I wonder if there's a concern, like, if we put it on Game Pass right now, people will think that it's basically trash and they're just trying whatever they can to try and drum up some interest around it, which may or may not be the case. But from a perception wise, I think that there could be an element of that.
I don't know at this point, what more can they, can Cyberpunk's reputation really go any lower? It got removed from the fucking PlayStation store. One of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen in my life. And I still do believe that there is a redemption arc for Cyberpunk 2077 in the future. I think that, we'll always remember, it'll always be part of its history that they fucked up the launch, to an historically bad level. That will always be a stain on, there'll be no telling of the Cyberpunk 2077 story 10, 15, 20 years now. When we're looking back on it historically, we'll always talk about the botched launch. But I do think it will get to a point where it's the genuinely really good, fully functional game that it should have been on day one. I am optimistic about the next gen versions. I think they will get it there. It's just a shame that they went through all of this. And again, completely unnecessary. The bean counters decided better to ship it now and make a quick buck. They still sold millions and millions of copies at launch. Better to ship it now and get those numbers, in our Q4 report. And we'll worry about the damage down the line. Again, because they know, as much as gamers will bellyache in the moment, when Cyberpunk 2 comes out or Witcher 4 comes out, people will go, ooh, but they fucked up the last game. But they're still going to come in and pre-order the game until gamers actually start voting with their wallets, which will never happen. It's going to continue. But I do look forward to playing it when I feel like it's fully, fully there.
Yeah, same. Like, I dipped into it after a bunch of the patches were released, and it seems playable in most places. Like, I did PC, and I tried a bit of the PlayStation 1, and it seemed okay. But I do hope that there is a kind of, like, a big, big, big moment where it's like, hey, we kind of fixed it, and it looks, and it's in a good place now, and it is where it should be, and you should check it out.
And by the way, I don't think a game being on Game Pass is in any way considered a stigma or a mark against it. It's agreed. On Game Pass, how good can it be? Fucking Halo Infinite's on Game Pass. Forza Horizon 5's on Game Pass. Age of Empires is on Game Pass. All kinds of fantastic games on Game Pass.
We know that.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like, I think like Game Pass is incredible. And like, I would love to see it. For me, it was kind of like, I wonder if there's a thinking on their side where it looks like we can't do it until we fix this thing. And it's amazing. Otherwise, it looks like we're basically giving up and giving it away for this thing. I don't at all foresee any Game Pass,
I think
Game
it
Pass
might,
as
I
being
mean,
a devaluation of a thing.
No, like not at all. And I think from given that the game has some reputational damage to fix, and it might be a lot of people might be at this point a little bit, oh, do I really want to pony up $60 on this game? I've heard a lot of bad things. Putting it on Game Pass could be a part of its redemption narrative. Because you know, it's you know, there are a lot of games that I might not otherwise try, but I will because they're in Game Pass because I basically already paid for the game. Why not try it out? It might actually be a great way for them to get the game in when it's in a fully ready to go state in front of an audience that otherwise might have been a bit gun shy about, you know, dropping $60 on it.
For sure. Our next story comes from gamesindustry.biz. Jeffrey Russo writes, Nintendo updates policies to increase push for diversity. Today, Nintendo released an updated corporate governance report that details increased efforts on diversity. The platform holder said that it is recruiting women and creating an environment in which women can build successful careers. However, Nintendo added it doesn't have specific targets for the appointment of women or foreign nationals to its managerial ranks. As of March 31st, 2021, women represented 23.7% of Nintendo's managerial staff globally and 4.2% of managers in Japan. As a global company engaging in the entertainment business, which is characterized by increasingly diversifying customer needs and preferences, it is essential that we leverage the talents of a diverse workforce, the company said. The updated policies to the company's diversity comes a week after Nintendo of America president Doug Bowser commented on the ongoing situation at Activision Blizzard. So I think this is just a good story that we want to call out. Kind of interesting that Nintendo has kind of stepped forward and said this is something that we need to do in light of everything that's going on, and I'm glad to see it happen. How do you feel about it, Gary?
Look, it's a positive story. This obviously is an area in which every company in gaming, every company in the world still has work to do. What I like, I mean, maybe it's a little bit reactive to kind of what's going on in the broader culture right now. But you know, when Activision say they're going to do something, I'm very, very skeptical because they feel like they have to say it because their back's against the wall because they're getting all this negative press right now. Nintendo's not under that kind of pressure. So for them to come out voluntarily and say, this is something we're going to do because we think it's the right thing to do. Again, I'll, you know, put your money where your mouth is. I'll fully believe it when I see it. A press release isn't the actual change we want to see. Let's wait and see if they actually back it up. But I appreciate that they are coming out and saying it without, you know, being under any particular pressure to do so, because, you know, they're not the ones in the firing line right now, but they're still saying they're going to try and do the right thing.
Yeah, it's good to see it happening, especially globally. Like, Japanese companies have their own kind of idiosyncrasies when it comes to workplaces and that kind of stuff. And traditionally, you know, they approach things in a more conservative way to a degree, but it's good to see that the kind of push for diversity and is kind of permeating all corners of the world to a degree, and hopefully it continues. Our fifth and final story comes once again from VGC's Tom Ivan, who says, Starfield has two special step out of the world moments, Todd Howard teases. Bethesda Game Studios has released the first in a new series of Starfield behind the scenes videos titled Into the Starfield, The Endless Pursuit. The 7-minute video features insight into the development process from Bethesda game director Todd Howard, studio director Angela Browder, and art director Matt Carafano. In it, they discussed how the game is more grounded and realistic than the studio's fantasy titles, but still equally capable of providing awe-inspiring moments. It got a more realistic science-based backing to it, said Carafano. Whereas Skyrim is an epic fantasy, this is more grounded, a more grounded game and a grounded setting about exploration, and I think that gives us a different take on how we make everything. So that's sort of the thing that you latch onto when we're making new areas, making environments, making characters. Howard added, the mechanics of the world are entirely different, but there are similarities, and I think that those are things we like. We like playing first person. We like having all the coffee cups. We like being able to touch everything. Those moments make the whole thing believable. Being able to watch the sunset at night and nighttime come and just sit there and watch the world go by seems like it's not gameplay, but it is vital to how you feel through the rest of it. Howard also discussed the feeling players get when they first step into a new game world. We always have that step out moment into the world. So to say, technology has changed. We've all changed. So our expectation when loading up a game are like, okay, I'm going to step out and there's going to be this moment Us being able to do that and have it feel new every generation, every game is something that is special about what we do. I like to say that Starfield has two step-out moments. It's cryptic. So basically they're saying this is a different setting, but the things that you want out of Starfield is going to be very similar to what you probably want out of an Elder Scrolls, Fallout, that kind of game. And I think it's also interesting that they're finally talking about the game, and it seems like this is the first of many upcoming behind-the-scenes documentary-style videos. So exciting times, Gary, for Starfield fans.
Yeah, a couple of things. First, in general, I actually think that's a really interesting topic for a whole other conversation, which is like, what are the great, or what are your favorite step into the world type moments in video games? Because there have been some great ones, right? I still remember 20 years ago stepping out that escape pod in the first Halo and seeing the Halo ring for the first time and looking up at it, and it just feels like this, oh my god, this is a vast world. You know, the big RPGs have that. I still remember crossing into Mexico in Red Dead Redemption for the first time. You know, those moments, right, they just give you a chill and you feel like you're fully part of this world. I think there's a really that would be a whole other podcast. Like, what are those? Because there's a great pantheon of those kind of great moments. I've mentioned just a couple, but I know there are many more. So far as Starfield is concerned, yes, very, very high on my list right now. If you say to me, which I believe is the proposition they're saying right now, all the depth and scope and granularity of a game like Skyrim, but set in outer space with spaceships and aliens and stuff, and a more Mass Effect kind of vibe. Yeah, I'm all the way in. That's exactly the kind of game that I wish, you know, a AAA developer was making, and they are making it. At the same time, to go back to our earlier conversation, Bethesda has shipped some broken ass games in its not too distant past, and I really, really hope that, again, this is interesting, right? It's the very first big release under the auspices of the new Microsoft ownership. I'm sure Phil Spencer, who delayed Halo for a year because it wasn't ready, is probably looking over Todd Howard's shoulder and saying, well, you know, this is not going to ship until, you know, we're not going to have another, you know, Fallout 76 situation with this game. It's going to ship when it's right. I hope that's the case. And I want to believe, but again, we talked earlier about just how many times we've been bitten in the past. But that aside, the type of game this is and the kind of experience that it's offering, yeah, I'm all in.
Yeah, I think like you are right. But the thing that I am kind of confident a little more in is like from the Phil Spencer and the team there, that, you know, it's just not him making that decision on his own. It's multiple people probably. If they're willing to delay Halo for a little while and make these very like divisive takes, decisions on Halo, I feel like they are invested in making sure that the stuff they put out is super, super high quality. So that is exciting. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, I'm excited to the prospect of a new Bethesda Game Studios title that is a little more grounded but still has those things is incredibly exciting to me. And it's one of the reasons why I have such a visceral response to every new re-release of Skyrim. And I love Skyrim, but I'm noted for being an anti-Skyrim re-release person, mainly for banter, but also because, like, the potential for a new one, having kind of like that defining, a culture defining moment again is super, super high with anything that Bethesda does. Last time they tried it, we had Fallout 76, which didn't go. So I think I'm just incredibly, incredibly thirsty for a new something that hits as hard as, you know, Fallout 3 did or Skyrim did. So it's exciting.
I don't want to derail the whole conversation, but it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. Do you have a personal favorite, one of those step into the world type moments? Here's the thing. It doesn't have to be even be step. I think of it more as like you're waiting for, you know, when you're waiting for like the beat to drop.
Yeah.
You know, when you're waiting for that, it's gonna drop. Here comes the drop. Like, I feel like really great games have that drop. Like for me, like Skyrim, the dragon showing up kind of is when the beat drops. Sometimes it can be much later in the game. Like, again, riding into Mexico, that's like pretty deep into the game, but it still feels like the game opens up. I was just thinking about Bioshock Infinite when you first see Columbia above the clouds. It's like, oh my god, fucking hell! Like this game has kicked into high gear now. Yeah. What do you have any favorites of your own?
Another one to mention. Like, I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but like the bathysphere in the first Bioshock when you're going to Rapture from the Rapture above ground, that's incredible. Yeah, and another one that, again, not one of my favorites, personal favorites, but I think is genuinely breathtaking is Breath of the Wild when you do the run up to the hill and the camera pans up along with you, and then you just see everything out and it does the title sequence. Incredible. My personal favorites are perhaps a little more understated, and I'm going to live up to my reputation and absolute fandom for it, but I think From Software does really, really good ones, and they're not in the traditional sense. They have an almost understated quality to it. Like when you leave the clinic in Bloodborne and go out into Yharnam, and there's like the title card of the area, and there's like a almost the sound of like a hammer hitting a kind of nail at the same time. And it's just like this visceral, here you're out in the world, and it's scary and it's like unsettling. I think that they do that really well. And also, like, anytime you go into like one of the safe zones, like Majula or Firelink Shrine or Firelink Shrine again, or you know, the dilapidated temple, there's like a moment of emerging into that environment, which is kind of like, it feels epic. And it also feels like a mixture of, this is a safe zone, but it's only a safe zone because the rest of everything out there is so horrible. And that kind of like, this is about to kick off, shit is about to hit the fan moment with those games is super, super big for me, I think. And also the one that I really like, or another that I like, is Metal Gear Solid 5, where you just go into Afghanistan for the first time. And it is it is Ocelot telling, you know, let the legend live again. And then you just kind of like turns and you're just Snake, and you just have the entire vast kind of vista in front of you, and you're just left there, which was major for me because it was like, that's not how Metal Gear Solid games open. And it was a very powerful statement of, this is a different kind of Metal Gear Solid game for you. And I thought that was incredibly powerful for me.
There's so many good ones that I'm not even thinking of right now, but I feel like we could have that discussion. Like, you do like a whole games cast just about this.
Oh, 100%, yeah. We should favorites. Do that.
Yeah.
For sure. Anyways, that podcast probably won't be coming anytime soon. But if I wanted to know what is coming soon to Mama Grub Shops today, Gary, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Hey.
What you got? Oh, wow.
There it is.
A lot of energy behind that one.
There it is. It was. I was waiting for Kevin because I didn't.
Yeah, want was this like a recorded drop there? Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, you're probably not listening to the feedback, right? The video that we're sending out, Gary.
Oh, but usually I can hear it though. I usually hear it without.
You have to watch the.
Yeah, overlay that'll thing. Be it. This is a mistake I've made almost every week, Gary. But. Okay. So today we have World's End Club for PC, MXGP 2021 for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, PC, your microwave, your fridge, your pocket watch, whatever it may be, it's out on that. Fight Night, not Fight Night, the boxing game, Fight Night with a K for PC. Oddworld Soulstorm Enhanced Edition for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, PC, your vacuum cleaner. Prop Night for PC, Evil Genius 2 World Domination for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, your microwave, your rice cooker, Tank de la Muerta, Switch, Mind Scanners for Switch, and Buried Stars for PC. New dates, Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song has been delayed to May 2022. Dying Light has gone gold and will be out on February 4th, 2022. Not a new story there, but interesting, it's gone gold 2 months ahead of its release, which is, I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. BBC iPlayer is now available on PS5. I just wanted to drop that in there for us Brits. You'd love to see it.
Only in certain regions, I'm
only
sure.
Only in certain regions, yeah. We probably can't get it here, but I've got a
Connect. I would love that. I would pay the BBC real money to have access to that iPlayer content, but I'm sure there's all kinds of reasons why.
I think I'm still paying the BBC, which is a good reminder.
I have an app called BritBox, but it's crap.
Yeah, so I have multiple brothers in the UK who, let's just say, we do some stuff and I get what I need off the BBC when I need it.
The less said, the better.
Yeah. Deals of the day: Dishonored and Prey, the Arcane Collection for Xbox One is $20 on Amazon, which is a fantastic deal because you're getting multiple Dishonored games. That alone is worth the price of entry. But if you have Game Pass, it's also on that as well for no added.
I can tell you haven't been here very long. So this will all change the longer you're here, but you still say Amazon and not Amazon. That'll change.
Amazon.
Do you say router?
Router. Instead of router?
Yeah.
No, he says
Which
router.
One's the British one?
Router.
Router.
I say router, yeah.
Okay.
Not router. I have a weird mishmash.
It's funny. Yeah. It's words like that are weird for me because I've lived here long enough that like routers weren't a thing. in 1996 when I moved here.
Yeah.
And obviously they became the thing.
Oh,
so I only ever heard it as router. So when I first heard a British person say router, I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, yeah. I have a weird, like sometimes people will say, oh, you say it the American way. How long have you been here? And it's not because I've been here very long. It's because one, South Asian, born in Pakistan, English is technically not my first language. And then also I grew up on American TV shows as well as Japanese. So I picked up like different pronunciations from around the world. So my vocab and pronunciation is very strange. And a lot of people love to let me know.
Same.
About
it's
it.
Like words that are in common usage here. I've kind of gone over to the American way of saying it because, you know, you just do. Yeah. But words that aren't used very often, I'll still retain. Like I still say laboratory. Instead of laboratory, like weird things like that, because like who said like I'm not a, like who you like how often would I have cause to use that word? So because it doesn't come up very often in conversation, it's not one that has had cause to kind of go over to the other way of right. saying it. So there's still sometimes like even in front of my wife, I'll like say an English word. She's like, wait, what? And then I have to explain it to her, like. It's not a word that I would say every day, so I still say it the English way.
So as you can probably tell, like we're going to talk about my pronunciation again a little bit, but I have a lot of struggle talking to like people who work in service industry because of the way I speak. I don't say my T's and I have a very East End kind of pronunciation and people really struggle. Like online, people give me shit for it all the time. And I'm like, I can't change it, man. It's the way I am. But when I'm out like asking for things at a store, they or like at a restaurant, they really do not get, and I have to do a fake American accent.
Yeah,
for them
I used
to
do that.
When
I first came to America, I was like, you know what, fuck these guys, I'm going to speak the Queen's English, and if they can't understand me, it's their problem. Yeah. But it's not their problem, it actually is my problem because I can't get the things that I want. I go to a restaurant and say, can I have some butter and some water, please? And
yeah,
they would go, why is it some butter and some water? And they would go, oh, butter.
Yeah,
water.
That's exactly.
And then they would understand.
Mine is an evolution of yours, where I don't say butter, I say butter, and then I say water.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? And then I have to be like, water.
Do you remember
like,
that?
Okay.
Do you remember that old jingle they used to have for? I think it was Country Life butter. It was, you'll never put a better bit of butter on your knife.
Yeah. Yes. It always reminded me of like Fagin. Love to pick a pocket or two. Like the same kind of vibe to it in my head. Reader mail. Now it's time for reader mail. You can write in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get your questions read on the show. Just like no one sent in reader mail. I checked multiple times and no one sent in. You hate to see it, but I just wanted to call out the fact that you can send in reader mail. And if you're not sending in reader mail, you're actively dropping the ball. We do have a squad up though. This comes from Jordan, who says, hey there, Kind of Funny Games Daily crew. With Spider-Man dropping in Marvel's Avengers today, I wanted to remind all the listeners about the Kind of Funny Avengers Discord, where you can find best friends to partner up with. Anyone can join by going to invite.gg/KF Avengers. That's invite.gg/KF Avengers. So if you want to play some Marvel's Avengers, now that Spider-Man's out, just jump in there and you can find other people. Let's look at You're Wrong. I expect there's going to be absolutely nothing in here because we are, of course, perfect. There's nothing in here.
Did you just drop the segment whenever we're on?
We don't get things. That's not how we do. This week's host, Wednesday, Blessing, and have we decided who it is? Because it just says question mark.
I don't know. So it's a surprise.
According to this, it's
going to
be Blessing and the Riddler will be here. Thursday, it's Tim and me again, I assume. And then Friday is going to be Janet and Rebecca Valentine.
Oh, I have an update on tomorrow, not the Riddler.
Okay,
but
who's
one,
not the
one? Michael Hyam.
Oh, Michael Hyam,
cool.
The biggest socio in the games industry. If you're watching live on Twitch, after this, we are raising money for Project Hope and their team. Greg Miller is going to be back, and they're going to be playing Marvel's Avengers with Snowback Mike, and you get to see how Spider-Man plays on the day Spidey is released. If you want to catch that stream later,
smoothly.
I'm sure it'll be absolutely fine.
That's a high bar, isn't it, for Marvel's Avengers? Because the Insomniac Spider-Man games are so good, and
it's
not a totally different play
so
style.
Sad.
So it's going to get compared, right? And I'm guessing it's not
100%,
as good.
100%. No, it's not. Like, if only they had figured out a deal to be like, can we do Wolverine instead or something?
Yeah. I mean, like, that. The Insomniac stuff is good, but the high bar for me still is Capcom in the Marvel versus Capcom's, series, because Spider-Sting, incredible version of that character. If you want to catch the stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays and you can watch that charity stream. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through all the nerdy news you need to know about. We've got a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames now. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, laugh and grow fat. #FreeMarvel vs. Capcom 2.